Well, hello there, everyone, and welcome to the Sure IDC podcast, the show about everything and anything. This is Lucas, and let's see what topic we can get into today. Now, you know, we talk about movies, songs, video games, board games, food, books, personality traits, animals, history, anything and everything you can think of. So sit back and relax because we're just having a good time. Now, this is first. You can actually see me, so that's a new thing to start. But today is another Star Wars episode, and we haven't done one of those in a while, but I'm very excited today because we are going to talk about one of my favorite characters, Obi-Wan Kenobi. We're going to talk about the character's history, where we see him in time, and we'll end the conversation with talking about the new TV series. Now, I keep saying we. Joining me again today is Blake. How are you doing today, Blake?
Good. Thank you for having me here, Lucas. It's great to be back on the show once again.
Yes, you are back. It has been a while, for sure. But
now people can finally see my face.
I know. They can see you, too. You have heard us for, can you believe? Oh, I've been doing this for over 2 years. Isn't that crazy? We're on season three and everything, and it just feels like yesterday that I was just like, hey, I want to start a podcast. So anyway, but yeah, so Star Wars, of course, you're one of my go-to people for talking about Star Wars. I know you, right? Yeah.
Me? Really?
Wow. You. Yeah. I mean, I have so many friends who love Star Wars that I probably would love to talk about Star Wars, but what is, I guess, to start off, I mean, I know this isn't pertaining to Obi-Wan because it might be a different character entirely, but I don't know if we've mentioned it before, but kind of remind us if you have said it before, but who is your favorite character in Star Wars?
If we're going by the movies, I'd say my favorite character is Anakin Skywalker. I found his journey to be really compelling throughout the prequels and the originals, and just his redemption story at the end. Really, really good. As far as like the whole universe, legends, everything, I kind of go back and forth on it, but I have to say, I don't know if you've heard of this character, but I'd say Revan might be my favorite character in the lore of Star Wars. But sometimes it switches back and forth between him and Anakin still. But yeah. I mean, there's so many great characters. Obi-Wan is obviously up there. So I'm excited to talk more about him today, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Revan is a good character. I don't know much about Revan. Just kind of bits and pieces here and there because I have never played KOTOR.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know much about him. But I what I've heard, I like. So, but I of course Anakin. You know, he's kind of the big deal. He's the head honcho in like every movie ever. So. And of course, Obi-Wan is as well. But yeah, those are solid choices. I'm surprised it's not Jar Jar, though.
Oh, Misa no like it. I actually do like Jar Jar. I'm one of the few people on this earth that likes Jar Jar Binks.
I know. That's why I said it. I was like, man, I'm surprised you just didn't joke us, you know, punk us all with, oh, Jar Jar's definitely my favorite. You know, I was really expecting that.
You know, he's very compelling. You know, he's secretly a Sith Lord, and you know, it's something we didn't actually get to see, but it's out there.
Oh, if they really did that, I just don't know what I would do. I'd just be like, wow, they're definitely doing this for the fans, but I don't know.
Misa joining the dark side. You saw old Bombad.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it makes sense though. Like, it really does. Anyway, this episode's not about Jar Jar. It's about
about to lose all of our listening viewers.
Yeah, just talking about Jar Jar. Ah, psych! This episode's actually about Jar Jar Binks. Actually, that'd be interesting. So, Obi-Wan Kenobi, he is definitely, you know, a character that you see throughout Star Wars history, I guess. The first time you see him is, of course, in episode 4, New Hope. And Alex Guinness is playing him. He's kind of this old, wise, mysterious man that, you know, just kind of runs into Luke when he's in danger, and then he becomes, you know, you find out that he's a Jedi and everything. So what are your thoughts of Obi-Wan in the original series when we see him?
Well, I remember when I was a kid getting exposed to the original trilogy for the first time, and, you know, Ben Kenobi, Obi-Wan, however you want to call him, he was always one of my favorite characters. He was very wise. He didn't push himself out there too far, or like insert himself into every situation or conversation. He was very thoughtful about what he would say or what other characters would say around him. And he always, you know, seemed to have the wisest, you know, piece of guidance for the other characters in the show or in the movies. And so I think, you know, even back then, without knowing his full history, just from watching A New Hope, I always thought his character was very intriguing. Obviously, Alec Guinness, who played him, exceptional actor. Yeah. Turns out he didn't really like playing Obi-Wan, or really didn't like Star Wars for a while, at least. I don't know if he softened up towards the end, but he didn't like the character, but he was very good at playing it. So,
yeah. Well, why didn't he like the character?
He felt Star Wars in general was a bit of a children's story, and it was almost kind of demeaning for him to play it. And he was famous for saying, you know, it had rubbish dialogue, and it made his character practically unbearable to watch. I guess there's an incident where this mom brought her kid to get like an autograph or something. And he said he agreed to sign like a poster or something. He'd agreed to sign it only if the kid promised to never watch the movie again. And he said it would have an ill effect on his life if he kept watching it.
Oh my gosh.
So he did not like playing the character, but he obviously enjoyed the money he kept getting. So that remained.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I kind of understand. I kind of understand at a certain point, because, you know, this movie, no one, when you did A New Hope, which is, of course, you know, he's mainly in A New Hope. That is where he shines.
Mm-hmm.
And then he dies. Like, what? An hour in?
Mm-hmm.
Even that? I don't know. I need to watch it again. But I'm going to be watching Star Wars, you know, from beginning to end here in a little bit. Or I might have already done it. I don't know when I've done it. So I can understand where he's coming from, because the character's not the character there. I mean, yes, you said he played it really well, which he does. He plays a very good old Obi-Wan Kenobi, but he doesn't know. He doesn't know anything about what we know watching it now. Mm-hmm. So, and like I said, he dies halfway through. So of course I'd be an actor that'd be like, wow, yeah, this character seems kind of strange. You know, who knows? He might have never been told, oh yeah, you're going to come back in the fifth and sixth one as well as a ghost. So he might have had that mentality, you know, who knows? But
yeah, and I mean, there were even some of the other actors had a hard time with the first Star Wars when it was being made, because, I mean, there were people that even wondered if it would get finished. There were just a lot of, if you go, especially if you watch, I think there's a documentary of, there's like a couple documentaries on the making of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you had someone dressed up as a Wookiee or a walking carpet, as Leia likes to say. You had all these weird aliens and creatures, and it was all brand new. I mean, no one knew that it was going to be famous for really anything. And Alec Guinness was already famous for other roles for many years. So,
yeah,
I can kind of see the skepticism when he's playing this character, especially like you said, he dies like an hour 20 or whatever into the film. But hey, I will say I'm really curious what he would think if he knew where his character would go and the rest of the movies and series that his character would be. And I wonder if his opinion would have changed if he had any inkling of what his Obi-Wan character was going to look like down the road.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely grown into a character that I feel like has had the most depth. You know, obviously you have the main characters, you know, what the story's about, you know, Anakin, Leia, Luke, Han, you know, all the Skywalkers, you know, all of them, they have amazing depth. But Obi-Wan is just one of those characters that almost has more depth than Anakin in some sense. I mean, maybe not to the same extent, but, you know, Obi-Wan is definitely a main character in the Star Wars world. But in reality, it's not about him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an interesting character. And I think that, I don't know, maybe he would have a different perspective if he knew where his character would, where Obi-Wan would end up. So, but yeah, I mean, in the original series, you know, it's really just kind of, you know, we hear the term hermit, you know, Hermit Obi-Wan, Hermit Kenobi, and then of course he turns into the Force Ghost in the other movies. But I thought, I mean, this is just where his character was starting, which is interesting because he's gone. So, mm-hmm. it's genius work, really. I mean, maybe that's why Kenobi's is so in depth, because at the beginning of his story was his end. And so as long as you didn't mess up what led to that, you could have free reign doing whatever you wanted. So I guess that's a good aspect that they were able to play off of with what they have done. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an unusual thing to do, to create your characters and one in particular that has seen so much, yet we really just get a reference to it, the Clone Wars, in the first a movie that comes out, and he's not in it for very long. And then, you know, so to go back and explain what happened and to do all these different things with him, and for, in my opinion, for his character to become even more important to the Star Wars story and for his character to become even more beloved just is a testament to, you know, obviously George Lucas, but some other people that collaborated on making that character what we know him to be now.
Yeah. It's truly a great start of his story, but of course we see him the most, you know, most of his character growth happens in the prequels, the Clone Wars, you know, all that stuff. So I guess the next time we see him, he's just a young Padawan under, you know, the master, Qui-Gon Jinn, and he is just kind of learning everything. So I guess, you know, we don't know the full story of Obi-Wan, kind of like how he started, but I think if I researched correctly that he was just a force sensitive child and the Jedi took him because for some reason the Jedi's did that. But the Jedi just took him, and pretty much he was in the Jedi temple from a very young age, just training to be a Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's Legends, which has their own stories of Obi-Wan as a young Padawan, and then I guess they're making some newer things to kind of, I don't know if completely overwrite some of that, but to kind of further explain what his journey was when he first started. But from my understanding, you know, he starts out, like you said, and I don't think Qui-Gon was originally going to take him as his apprentice. Originally he wasn't too impressed with him. And in Legends anyway, he had just had a Padawan who turned to the dark side. So he didn't want to go through that again. And even after they eventually become master and apprentice, they clash over their different viewpoints. And you see that in Phantom Menace too, where they don't agree on Anakin. They don't agree on certain things that happen in the Phantom Menace. And, but at the end of the day, they learn how to bond together. And I feel like Qui-Gon's character is such an integral part of what Obi-Wan becomes that you kind of see elements of the older Obi-Wan that we will see with the Alec Guinness version. If you just watch like the prequels, you kind of see that. You're like, okay, I can kind of see where Obi-Wan eventually ends up as this older, wiser Jedi, as he gets it from his master in large part. So that I always found that interesting, is just seeing how characters will become who they will become through other characters.
I mean, I think that Obi-Wan has a lot of Qui-Gon towards the end, which we'll get to that, of course, you know, because we're going to go through his whole history. But I mean, even Ewan McGregor, you know, towards the end, having a lot of that, you know, Alec Guinness aspect too. And so, you know, very well done in kind of blending things and taking characters. I mean, even during the Clone Wars and everything, he, you know, I just felt like, I don't know, maybe him and Anakin had the same relationship kind of in a sense, even though Obi-Wan was the older one and Qui-Gon, you know, Qui-Gon was the older one, so Obi-Wan's the younger one. Now Obi-Wan's the older one. You know, it is interesting to see how would Qui-Gon have trained Anakin differently than Obi-Wan, because Obi-Wan didn't really want Anakin. He didn't really want that responsibility at all. And, you know, and he was just kind of respecting Qui-Gon's last wish to train him and everything. But Obi-Wan's kind of just progression through, we can talk about the prequel trilogy first, but just his progression through the Clone Wars is interesting. You kind of see him becoming, I don't know, it's just a weird way to explain Qui-Gon, or not Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, because he is very wise, but yet he does what he's told still, you know, from the council. He kind of doesn't, he doesn't voice his opinions much, even though, especially in the Clone Wars animated series, he wishes that he could. Like, I feel like in the Clone Wars series, you really see that conflict, that kind of pulling between the council and what his opinions are, which I guess is coming from Qui-Gon a little bit, because Qui-Gon didn't really agree with the council as well.
Yeah, and I mean, if you just watch Attack of the Clones, the second prequel movie, you kind of see that too, especially when Obi-Wan is talking to Count Dooku when he's being held prisoner, and you know, Count Dooku is basically telling him, if you could only see the truth the way I see it, you know, and the way Qui-Gon started to see it. And, you know, Obi-Wan is much more devoted to the classic Jedi code. He doesn't really, he kind of sees it in a more black and white type of deal. In some ways, like you said, he doesn't question a whole lot the council and their motives. In Phantom Menace, you know, famous for saying, if you would just follow the Jedi code, you'd be on the council, to Qui-Gon. And then we see Obi-Wan on the council later. So there is that element there. But then I think especially, you know, after Anakin falls and he starts to realize that not everything he believed was necessarily accurate. You know, not everything that he taught Anakin was necessarily the best way to do it. And yeah, just seeing that, you kind of see seeds of that in the Clone Wars, you know, and you see elements of just dark side rising and the Jedi Council being more and more clouded by their judgment. And, you know, he's still loyal to them, but he tries to be a little bit more sympathetic towards Anakin's doubts and his questions and his frustrations. So it's interesting to kind of see, even though he's learned from Qui-Gon, he's not quite learned everything he needs to yet. And that's, it's honestly, it's part of the tragedy of Obi-Wan's character is he's very wise, yet he still fails, you know, even as one of the greatest Jedi masters of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, he just fits very perfectly in that Jedi box, you know, like, I mean, he's very powerful. He's very wise, but, and he is a great Jedi, but at the end of the day, you know, if you were to count on your, if you were to count on your hand, the most powerful Jedi ever, he might make the list, maybe, you know? And so it's like, he's very average, but he is a higher average.
Yeah.
But just his strategy is very cunning. His skill is very, it's just, it's like I said, he's very, I don't know. It's just very like perfect. I don't know, but not like perfect in the sense of perfect, but like perfect in like, he's just very well-rounded. That's a good word, I guess. He's very well-rounded. He's not really powerful in the Force. He's not really powerful in lightsaber fighting. He's kind of just average in everything. Maybe a little bit more than average in everything. I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but would you agree with that?
Yeah, in a way. He's someone that, even though he doesn't like flying, he's a very gifted flyer. Yes. He's very gifted in that. I think his lightsaber technique was like the Sorosu form. I can't remember specifically what it says in the books, but he's extremely good at that. You know, in the fight between him and Anakin, you know, they're pretty much equal when they're fighting. And that's why it lasts so long, is because neither one can break the other one, because they all know each other's moves. So he's, I'd say he's more than average, but at the same time, you know, he could probably have learned even more, I feel like, if he'd wanted to. Not necessarily with a dark side, but, you know, he's very good at what he does. But I think part of his problem is he adheres so much to what the council says that it almost limits him in a way.
Yeah.
To what he could.
Yeah. Do you think that he, like, maybe progresses too quickly, in a sense? Like, you know, he's a Padawan in the first episode, and then he pretty much is all like, yeah, you're ready. You can train someone. And so, like, he's still learning so much when he even has Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe there was no time to learn everything, you know, kind of like more in depth with everything, because he himself had a Padawan that he had to train as well. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, like you said earlier, he didn't want to be Anakin's master. He didn't want Anakin on board when they left Tatooine. He kind of saw him as a threat to his own progression, as far as, you know, all of a sudden here's Qui-Gon obsessed with Anakin and the prophecy of the Chosen One, and now Obi-Wan's kind of off in the background a little bit, and you know, he tries to tell the council, you know, I'm ready to face the trials, and kind of similar to what Luke says later on. You know, he's very headstrong, he's a bit impatient, he's very devoted, but he doesn't see the limits of his own capabilities sometimes. And I think when you put two flawed characters together, Obi-Wan and Anakin, there's a lot of great techniques, there's a lot of great attributes, but there's also, you know, Obi-Wan, one of the reasons that Anakin fell to the dark side, at least according to Obi-Wan, is because of Obi-Wan's own inability to train him properly. You know, he believed that he was just as good as Yoda could be for training, and it turned out not to be the case. So, I think this thrusting Anakin upon Obi-Wan to be trained is almost it's like it was doomed to fail from the beginning. Yeah. Maybe not to the extent it actually happened, but there was just, you know, we see it throughout all the years, even references and like books and things like that, where they just never really, until towards the very end, right before he fell, they've always had this conflict where they just can't quite get along fully or can't quite trust each other fully. And, you know, when you have that, it's just typically not going to work out very well in the end. So it's one of those sad stories of the Star Wars universe, I think.
Yeah, that's so true. So what did you think of Ian McGregor in the prequel series? I mean, of course, he's my favorite character, so I have to. I love Ian McGregor. But yeah, I mean, just his portrayal of Obi-Wan in the series or in the episode movies, I felt like he did a very good job, a very strong character, a very strong actor in what happened with Obi-Wan throughout the movies. So,
yeah, Ewan McGregor, I think, is probably the best casting choice that they had for the prequels of the younger versions of the classic characters. He mm-hmm. embodied so much of the portrayal that Alec Guinness put through. And, you know, if you go back and watch some of the, like, the making of on the prequels and it just even interviews regarding the Obi-Wan show, Ewan talks about how he specifically tried to make his character a younger Alec Guinness, but each movie later getting progressively closer to the Alec Guinness we see in A New Hope. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just one of those few times where in a case like this, where the casting is just so right, there's no one else I can think of that could have played that role like he did. And yeah, he just plays it so well. And, you know, he's able to put on so much emotion whenever they finally, he, you know, has to fight his apprentice, and you see the harm, you see the pain in him as he's doing this. And at the very end, and you see what he's going through, he conveys that so well. And then when you watch the originals, it just kind of flows together. So mm-hmm. yeah, I'm such a huge Ewan McGregor fan. I hope we keep seeing him come back in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just so good. I mean, you know, people give a lot of flack to the prequels. But one of the best aspects of the prequels is Ewan McGregor. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that he really is kind of the character that keeps the prequels moving in a sense. Of course, Anakin is a big aspect of that, and Hayden Christensen. This isn't a Vader podcast episode, so we won't talk much about that. But he definitely, you know, pushes what he can do through as well with the series. But I just feel like Ian McGregor is just a very good rock in the entire mm-hmm. series. I mean, yes, you can have your complaints with acting choices, and you can have your complaints with dialogue and stuff like that. But I do feel like the acting from Ian McGregor is very solid in every prequel movie. I mean,
oh yeah. Yeah. He's just great the whole way through.
Yeah. Yeah. So also, he is a very, I just feel like, so it's very interesting to watch the movies, the prequel movies, and you see the difference in their behavior. So one of the biggest scenes that I always like is in the third one. So of course we start off with the attack on Coruscant, and of course, you know, Obi-Wan and Anakin are flying their jets or their starships into jets into Grievous's ship. You know, Obi-Wan, when he gets in, he kind of flies out and does like a little spin and, you know, kills him. Anakin's just chilling in there going, oh yeah, I'm going to take my time to get out of the ship. But just Obi-Wan's like character progression, you know, he always tends to be a little bit more aggressive. Like he's there to do a job and he kind of gets that job done. Mm-hmm. But you know, later on he kind of, he learns about patience, and one of my favorite moments is, and especially leading up to, the Kenobi show and, you know, on Disney Plus and just kind of the character that we see in that, which we'll talk about later, but is when he drops in on Utapau in front, you know, in the middle of hundreds of thousands of droids and Grievous and all the separatists. And he's just all like, and of course the famous line, you know, hello there.
Hello there.
Just the confidence he has that he could just go into any situation and he is able to maybe not control the situation because he kind of gets in trouble in some of those aspects, but I guess he just has a confidence about him that I think is just brilliant. So what's your thoughts on that?
You know, it's something that each time I go through the prequels, I'm amused by. And that's how, especially in Attack of the Clones, Obi-Wan's constantly getting on Anakin for being reckless and jumping into action and all these kinds of things and losing his lightsaber. Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, when moments like that, it's like, okay, he just jumped in front of, you know, thousands and thousands of droids. All they'd have to do is just shoot and he'd be dead. Yeah. He'd be able to block all of it. And it's just kind of funny how, you know, even though these characters get annoyed at each other, they're also very alike in so many ways. So I've always appreciated that, that kind of like repetitiveness, if you will, of from one character to the other and how they kind of mirror each other. So, yeah, that's one of the, I would say, the most memorable parts of that film, just for his character alone. And yeah, I mean, just seeing how he'll get upset at his Padawan for losing his lightsaber, but then I'm pretty sure he also loses his lightsaber, and you know,
yeah, it's kind of like, do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, hey, don't do this unless you know for sure that, you know, this. And maybe, right. Maybe Obi-Wan is just like, well, like maybe he's thought about every aspect and he knows that Grievous is going to be like, no, I'll take care of him myself because I'm cocky like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is definitely aspects that Obi-Wan would know. Like, oh, I'm going to jump in there and Grievous is going to be like, no, get away. And then by that time, the troops will come in and, you know, whatever, I'll have him preoccupied. But yeah, definitely very reckless. I mean, Grievous just could have been like, wow, that sucks, shoot him, and then, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you know, you see, and that's the thing about the prequel movies, is you only see just a tip of the Clone Wars aspect. What do you think, if you... because you've watched all the animated Clone Wars series, correct?
Okay. Yeah.
What is your opinion of Obi-Wan in the animated Clone Wars series and Obi-Wan in the movies? Do you think that they do very good at, like complementing each other? Do you feel like there's, you know, I feel like there's some depth in the Clone Wars more, of course, because they're able to kind of hash out more. But what's your opinion of the Obi-Wan in Clone Wars and the Obi-Wan in the movies?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Clone Wars in general, and I think the portrayal by James Arnold Taylor, who voices Obi-Wan, not just in that show, but he's voiced Obi-Wan in like so many Star Wars games and everything. From like,
he sounds just like him too.
Oh, I know, it's
just crazy. Like him. Yeah, it's awesome.
He's an incredible voice actor, but. He's able to bring out, especially one of my favorite things about the Clone Wars is you see a lot more of his sense of humor in there, and so many one-liners from Obi-Wan that just has me laughing. And just the way, like the banter between him and Anakin as they kind of like sass each other almost, or You know, Anakin finds ways to still get under his skin when he's jumping into action, or who tries to turn it into a competition of who can slice the most battle droids and things like that. And Obi-Wan will start to get annoyed, but then at the end he'll be like, oh, by the way, I did more than you, or something like
that. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's very much, yeah. I mean, it just shows who Obi-Wan is, that, like, mm-hmm. it's just, I don't know, there's just something about him that just is, that right there just speaks true to who he is. Like, he's like, at the end of the day, I'm here to you know, to take this whatever, this bunker, this palace, this whatever. But Anakin is kind of like taunting him a little bit, and at the end of the time, you know, after the job is done, he's just like, oh, by the way, I won. It's just like, wait, what? I didn't think you were playing. Like, it's just so good. It's so good. But anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that, I just felt like that kind of really solidified what I you know, have been talking about. So.
Yeah. And I mean, just, that's why I recommend people watching it, is because mm-hmm. there's only so much you can get with, you know, a 2-hour movie or 3 2-hour movies. Yeah. And you know, it adds another dimension to each of these characters. It introduces more new characters that we don't see in the films, but actually complement the other characters. And it's like this one big universe of things that, you know, you kind of miss out on what Star Wars is meant to be if you don't see the Clone Wars. I mean, there's obviously certain episodes that are more, they're not real serious, they're kind of jovial, they're not super important to the overall narrative, but they're there. Yeah. But then there's others that are incredibly important and actually add a lot of depth to their characters that we see in the films and things that we see happen later in the franchise. So yeah, I'm a huge fan. I try to go back and watch the Clone Wars like once a year, maybe once every other year. And I'm just, every time I'm just really happy with it. And especially knowing that George Lucas worked on a lot of it, or guided a lot of the direction for some of that material.
Yeah. I definitely need to rewatch it again. But one of the aspects that I want to touch on, even just in that, is the depth, because, you know, Jedis aren't supposed to care about anything. You're not supposed to love anything, you know, because feelings lead to anger, anger leads to hate, you know, whatever. And you know, you'll never know that Obi-Wan actually cares deeply about someone unless you watch the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, Bo-Katan's sister, Satine, you know, the you know, Mandalore and everything, and Maul, and that whole situation there. But yeah, I mean, he very much, you know, falls into that caring love aspect, which he's not supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, and maybe if things transpired differently, maybe that would make him leave the council. I mean, who knows what would have happened? But yeah, you would never know that Obi-Wan actually fell for that temptation. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but like, had those feelings unless you watch the Clone Wars.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite arcs of the whole series, is that arc towards, I think it's season 4, season 5. But yeah, I mean, seeing that, it was just so interesting seeing a character who is constantly lecturing about, you know, mind your feelings, be careful of all these things. And yet, at the end of the day, I mean, he's still a human being to the core. Yeah, he's a Jedi, but he's also, he has feelings, he has emotions, and seeing how he works his way through them, you know, and you almost wonder if he's going to turn to the dark side by the end of that arc because of what happens to the person he loves. And it's another example of, I guess it's an example of one of the weaknesses of the Jedi teachings. Mm-hmm. But it's also an example of how to guard against temptation and revenge and anger, and how to control it too. So there's a lot of moving parts there that I think are well worth exploring.
Yeah.
It's also really interesting to see Anakin in the background watching some of this, you know, he's seeing his master go through this, and that's just not something you see necessarily in the movies.
Yeah. Well, I've said it once, I'll say it again. You know, the biggest thing about the Jedi is they teach you to not feel anything. And that is one of the worst things you can do, because what's the one thing that makes you feel when you can't feel anything? It makes you angry, makes you upset. And so they kind of just force people into the, into this dark side, whatever. But, you know, it's not about feeling those feelings. It's about what you do to control those feelings, what you do to adapt to those feelings, what you do when you feel those feelings. And so I feel like it's definitely one of those things where the Jedi should have trained Jedi to control their emotions. Not necessarily, oh, you can't love anybody. It's how you control that love, how you control those emotions, how you control that anger. I mean, because I mean, even they did it. They kind of mastered anger in a sense, like some Jedi did, and they became more powerful without fully turning to the dark side. I know it's kind of a rabbit hole there, but anyway, that's, yeah, I've mentioned that several times, but that is just one of the big aspects about the Jedi that kind of led to their downfall. But of course, in Clone Wars, you also get a lot more Maul. I don't want to talk too much about Maul because I'm probably going to have a Maul episode at some point in time. I mean, why not? But yeah, Maul's factuation with Obi-Wan is just, I mean, it pretty much goes on all of Maul's life ever since he got chopped in half in episode one. So, and of course, Maul's the one who killed, you know, the woman he loved and stuff like that. So,
Kenobi.
Yeah. So for some reason, just some factuation with him, which kind of is a good segue to, the Rebels TV show. If you have not watched Rebels or Clone Wars, I 1000% recommend them. Just so much more depth to the story, to just everything. I mean, the movies can only do so much, like you said, Blake. But these TV shows, they really just get, they're so good. And so many people haven't watched them because they think they're for kids, but they're just so good. So much depth, so much story arc. And, but Obi-Wan does show up in Rebels and, pretty much is, that's an interesting fight between him and Maul. I'm pretty sure Obi-Wan does two moves.
Basically, yeah.
And then Maul's dead. Spoiler alert, sorry. sorry if you haven't seen it, but yeah. So yeah, just even that aspect. I mean, just Obi-Wan and at that point in time, this is before even A New Hope, just with those two, you know, he's fought Maul so many times. He's fought Maul his entire life almost. After killing, he's like, you just won't die, will you? but in that moment, he literally just does like two moves and barely fights him, and he's just gone. So you even see him in that. I think that's the only scene in Rebels, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty brief. There's not much in there.
Yeah.
And I mean, we see Maul more.
Yeah.
We barely see Obi-Wan throughout the series, just a handful of times, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Maul's definitely kind of in everything. It's one of those characters where it was very like mysterious and brief, and then he was kind of like, he kind of blew up in the shows and stuff.
Brought back by popular demand of the fans.
Yeah. So for the last topic of conversation, is there anything else to say about Clone Wars or anything like that?
No, I think we've covered it. Again, it's one of those things where, whether it's a book or a TV series, it's able to add so much to a character that we already love, which is why we recommend it. I mean, it adds more depth to their character, and it also just kind of adds more lessons to learn from some of these characters and their flaws, and seeing some of the flaws in maybe us with certain things that we hold on to. And so, yeah, it highly recommended. Watch Clone Wars, watch Rebels, all those things.
Watch the movies, just watch Star Wars. Come on. Which you probably have if you're listening to this episode.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's kind of end the conversation with the new TV series. on, you know, Disney Plus. It just came out a little bit ago. We finally got to see Ian McGregor back. What has it been, like 10 years or something like that?
Oh, more than that. Revenge of the Sith came out in 2005, so it would have been 17 years. Yeah.
Wow. Unbelievable. So amazing, of course. We love Ian McGregor, so we were excited to see him back. I kind of already hinted a little bit at kind of what, I mean, so pretty much what's happened is him and Yoda are really the only Jedi. He knows that Yoda and him are the only Jedi that are alive. I mean, he knows that others have kind of are alive, but he knows for sure that him and Yoda survived. He kind of assumes and hopes that other Jedi survived, but anyway, his job is to protect Luke, so he goes to Tatooine, yada yada yada. And so the Kenobi show, it shows him as kind of a broken man. And why wouldn't you be? You know, I was kind of fascinated with this thought of Obi-Wan, you know, kind of being that depressed, no hope left, because he just got done fighting. And I mean, not really, it was like what, 10 years or something like that, is what they did timeline wise. But, you know, he lost his life. He lost his friends. He lost his best friend and his apprentice. Not only did he lose him, you know, in death or whatever, but, you know, he lost him to the dark side and everything. And so, and now he's just kind of on this desert planet going for Luke. So, very interesting with just him kind of giving up. So what's your opinion of kind of the start of the series?
The start of the series, I'd say, is very strong. You know, it starts out with, you know, just kind of bringing you up to speed on what happened with the prequels, and which, by the way, I think was edited together very nicely.
yeah.
But it starts out, it's something that I've always wanted to see, is how is Obi-Wan coping with all of what happened? You know, seeing everything he knew and loved his whole life just be destroyed by his best friend. Yeah. Whom he trained and failed. And, you know, there's got to be some severe PTSD from that, some severe trauma that he's dealing with. And, you know, one of the worst things you can do as is someone that goes through something like that is to be alone. And that's pretty much what he is. He's alone. Yeah. I mean, he's not allowed to communicate with Yoda through the Force because otherwise the Empire, the Emperor, whoever could sense that and track them, etc. Yeah. Not allowed to exert himself in the Force for the same reason, you know, has to basically just wait for Luke to come of age to where he can train him. And all the while he's trying to live a completely different life. You see him, you know, working in a butcher shop pretty much. Just trying to get by from a day-to-day basis, living a very mundane, boring life for, you know, 10 years at that point. And so it's interesting seeing how he goes from being a, like, very powerful, you know, optimistic, warrior of the Jedi to being this very broken, beaten down older man. And it's interesting seeing that and then seeing, okay, how are they going to get it from this to where we see in A New Hope, to where he's still kind of, he's not quite the way he used to be, but he's a little bit more optimistic. He's not quite as depressed as we see in this show. Yeah. So I think starting out with the first episode really was strong, one of my favorites. As we get into the series, we'll talk about it more. I have a bit more mixed reactions to some of the stuff they did in the show. Mm-hmm. But as far as that goes, I think it was very solid.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely moments where I was like, oh, that's strange. Or, oh, okay, I guess we're going here. I mean, I guess it was interesting to see just him in general again, and then also just kind of where his story ended up in the series. What did you think of the moment that he found out that Anakin was still alive and that he was Vader? Like, were you like, oh yeah, he wouldn't know? Or would you be like, wait, I thought he knew?
Well, so this is where they're kind of retconning some things, and it's mostly legend stuff, so it's kind of like, it's not technically retconning, but it kind of is.
Yeah.
So they came out with a book called Kenobi, I think it was. It was like shortly before Disney bought Lucasfilm. And in that book, it takes place, I think, during the same time period, but he finds out that Darth Vader is alive, and he's basically in a cantina or something on Tatooine, and he sees like this news report of what the Empire is up to and where they're at. And then he sees Darth Vader, or he doesn't recognize him at first because he's never seen the suit, but mm-hmm. then they talk about Darth Vader, and he starts to have a panic attack, and he realizes, oh my gosh, he's still alive. And that's how they originally did it in like the expanded universe.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of expected them to try to do that again in the show, as far as have some sort of almost a I am your father revelation that just completely stuns and, you know, almost breaks the character. At the same time, I'm a little, I don't know that it's super believable. You know, 10 years go by, Obi-Wan's never heard of Darth Vader up to that point. I mean, seems a little far-fetched.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a huge deal, but I don't know. The way it was revealed too is kind of a thing that I'm not super into. You know, this character Reva, I don't know how much we'll delve into her, but this seemingly unknown character that somehow knows that Darth Vader is Anakin, which, not to get too much into a rabbit trail, is not supposed to be a thing. You're not supposed to know that. But, and that she reveals it to Obi-Wan. It's not horrible, but I just felt like it was kind of rushed the way they did it. I wish they would have put a little bit more thought into it. But it still has the desired effect of, you know, Obi-Wan being in terror that, oh no, he's still alive and he's probably going to come after me.
I mean, there's just so many aspects of the show. Like, I thought based on Kenobi alone, like Kenobi as a character in this show, I thought it was well done. It's almost kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's just like the prequels. And Obi-Wan was the rock that just was kind of like, yeah, we're here, we're watching him, this is why we're here. Why did this person, this character, just say that? I don't know why, but how did Obi-Wan react? Because there was just so much writing issues and just some other stuff that was just very strange in the show. But I thought Obi-Wan himself, I thought Ian McGregor did a fantastic job. I don't think there was ever a bad moment there. What do you think on that?
Oh yeah, 100% agree. And I mean, I think it's easy to forgive because of the way they end that episode when he finds out, and then immediately it cuts to Vader in the Bacta tank sensing Obi-Wan through the Force. And I mean, it's one of my favorite shots of that series is just that sudden awakening of the villain. And that part is very well done. Going into the show, I kind of expected like Vader to be hunting him down, all of a sudden find him and him kind of reveal to Obi-Wan who he is or something like that. I don't know. But still, I mean, the way they did it in the show and the way Ewan McGregor acted it out and everything was very solid. So,
yeah. How did you feel about Kenobi's character progression just in the show? Do you feel like it was kind of like, okay, speed it up, or do you feel like it was perfect, or do you feel like he you know, was too dragged out, or what's your opinion on that?
Well, it kind of feels like by the time we get to the end of the, I don't know, first season, I don't know if they're going to do another one or not, but if they are, by the time we get to the end of that arc in the story, it didn't really feel like there was a whole lot of progression, or rather the progression that Obi-Wan had at the very end was very much rushed. As far as getting his powers back and fighting Vader and so on. So there were, it's kind of both in a way. Some of it was rushed. Some of it was dragged out too much. It felt like we focused a little bit too much on characters that, frankly, I just don't really care about. Interesting characters, but yeah, for the Obi-Wan limited amount of time series that we had, it felt like they spent too much time on side characters and not enough time on really delving into Obi-Wan's psyche. Mm-hmm. You know, and from the very first episode, there's this basically this guarantee that we're going to see Qui-Gon at some point. And then when we finally see him, it's just like, well, took you long enough, and then cut to the credits. It's just like, was that? So there were moments like that where I felt like the writing, it's almost like they wrote those few moments really well, but to get to those moments either dragged out with some filler, arguably, or they just kind of, okay, let's see how quickly we can get to this moment, have this moment be really good. Yeah. But some of the scenes outside of that were kind of, that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I definitely thought we were going to see Qui-Gon earlier on in the series. But then, of course, you know, people were, you know, the people were using the excuse, or people were saying, oh, well, he hasn't used the Force in a long time, so he has to gain his confidence again, and he has to, you know, that's why he's struggling with the Force, so he can't connect with Qui-Gon using the Force. But another thing is I thought at the end of Revenge of the Sith, you know, they really kind of prepped that. They really got us going like, oh, hey, Yoda's going to train Obi-Wan to talk to Qui-Gon. 10 years later, he hasn't talked to Qui-Gon. You would think that Yoda would be like, okay, so this is what you do. We're going to talk to him, and then I'll head out. But, I mean, there was just kind of inconsistencies with that as well. Of course, I know that's just being picky. But, like, I don't know, I was expecting to see Qui-Gon a lot sooner. I was also expecting to actually have a freaking conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really want a conversation with Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon where Obi-Wan's just so like, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want this. Like, almost like an emotional, maybe not to that extent, but like an emotional rant. Like, what were you thinking? What were you doing? Like, what was the point of all this? Because you're the one that was like, you need to train the boy. And I'm all like, no, I don't. Like, I really want that conversation. I really want to see Qui-Gon's aspect, you know, Qui-Gon's perception of what happened. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
No, I think there's a lot of people that resonate with that. I think it's one of my biggest critiques of the show. And I think that the writers misunderstood about what the fans want. Is, yeah, it's cool to see a young Leia. It's cool to see Bail Organa again. It's cool to see some of these things that we haven't seen in a long time. It's awesome to see Vader again. It's awesome to see them fight. But that's not really the heart of Star Wars, though. It's not the lightsaber fights. It's not cameos. It's not nostalgia. It's the inner conflict of these characters. And, you know, there's so much of the show we don't really get that. We hear about it, but we don't really explore it. You know, and it's one of my biggest critiques of Revenge of the Sith, and I understand why there was no scene between Obi-Wan or Qui-Gon. There was actually a deleted scene, you can find it on YouTube, of Yoda talking to Qui-Gon. I don't think it's Liam Neeson's voice, but there's like a scene where Yoda starting to have a conversation with Qui-Gon through the Force, and they cut that out. And, you know, something that I've always wanted to see, you know, what's that conversation going to be like? And we don't really even get it. And so, yeah, I think that's one of the biggest missed opportunities for the longest time. Kind of going back to what you said too, it also messes up some of what was established in Revenge of the Sith, that there's going to be some training. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen the pitch meeting for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's hilarious. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's hilarious. One of the things they bring up is, how do they expect Obi-Wan to protect Luke if he's cut himself off from the Force and is a beaten, broken down old man?
And yeah, it's like, how's he going to train him?
I mean, maybe it's a plot hole that's been there for a long time before the series even came out, but I feel like the series just kind of opened that up even more. Like, the Empire could have easily taken out Obi-Wan, no problem, if they would have actually found him, and they could have captured Luke and been good to go. So,
yeah, I mean, I understand what they were going for, kind of like, you have to be in hiding, you're a broken man, not sure of himself. And that's one of the aspects that I kind of mentioned before, is this Obi-Wan that you see definitely would not jump into a room full of droids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and say hello there to General Grievous. Like, he's definitely not that person anymore. Which is fine. It's fine to have those moments of unsureness and brokenness. That's the whole point, you know, of being human and being a character and whatever. But there were just, yeah, there was a lot of aspects that I was just like, well, maybe he shouldn't have cut himself from the Force as much, you know, like that type [S2] Right. [S1] Of stuff as well. But yeah, I mean, I understand what they were going for with trying to be like, oh, well, he can't do anything because if not, the Inquisitors will find him or whatever. So, but yeah, overall, I think Obi-Wan in the show is great. I think Darth Vader is great. I know this isn't a review over the show. That's why I'm not talking too much about specific aspects of it. I just want to kind of focus on Obi-Wan himself, which is kind of hard not to talk about the show, but mm-hmm. but it was cool towards the end, you know, where I think one of the best parts in the kind of to help maybe with Obi-Wan's kind of let go of the past, because I don't know, maybe he's let go of the past. That's the confusing part. Has he let go of the past? Has he not? I think he hasn't, but it's been 10 years. I don't know. But it's just, you know, Anakin as Vader saying, which I thought that was really cool with the back and forth of Hayden's voice. And anyway, yeah. But you know, you did not fail, or you did not kill Anakin Skywalker. I did. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that was the moment that got him to be all like, oh yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know about it.
I think it was. Yeah, probably. I'd say that's what they're going with. It's when he realizes that, you know, it's kind of like that scene in Return of the Jedi when Luke tries to press Obi-Wan and say, well, there is still good in him. And he just kind of, well, he's more machine than a man. He's twisted. He's evil. You know, he and Yoda by that point have pretty much given up on Vader.
Yeah.
And I think that moment is in the show is what really does it for him. And when he says, well, then my friend is truly dead. And it's once again, it's almost, he's almost understanding, but he's not quite. He's almost understanding the failings, but he's not quite there yet. You know, he doesn't really understand that, yes, there were failures. Yes, there were many mishaps in the past, but there is still hope. He can still be redeemed. You know, it doesn't have to end with him dying to the dark side. So, yeah, there's a lot there, I think.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot there, definitely more to come. I still think he is not quite yet to Alex Guinness yet. I think they've confirmed there's more series coming, but they kind of left it off with Qui-Gon, and who knows, maybe in the second season we'll get that conversation with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. I sure hope so, because if not, I'm just going to be...
Like, why are we here, guys?
Like, why are we here? Like, I'm not just here for you, McGregor, anymore. No, I'm just kidding. I love you, McGregor. Well, wrap this up. Any last thoughts just in general about, Obi-Wan or just his progression or, you know, just anything that we kind of missed that you wanted to talk about?
I think it just kind of goes back to one of the things I love the most about Star Wars in general is how, you know, these characters aren't necessarily static. You know, they have things about them that are both admirable and also are flawed. Mm-hmm. And so just seeing the progression of Obi-Wan from a young, headstrong Padawan to a very wise and learned old man who, you know, really does play a role, not just in the Clone Wars and not just in, you know, the immediate events happening, but also plays a role in what the Jedi will become with Luke. And he leaves a long lasting legacy, I think, not just for the living characters that are present with him, but also the characters to come. So I think there's a lot to be learned about Obi-Wan. There's a lot to take away from the different things that he goes through. There's things to appreciate about his character. So I highly recommend, if you haven't watched all the series and all the movies, you should read some of the books that they've done over him, interviews with the cast members and George and all these other people. There's a lot of great material there.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's I love characters that, you know, aren't perfect, but they mm-hmm. have flaws, but yet they still try their best to help out the situation. They still try their best to, you know, overcome their flaws and to just try to be the best person they could be, you know, Obi-Wan. So my favorite characters are just like that. Obi-Wan, Tony Stark, you know, in Marvel, you know, definitely not a perfect person at all, but Obi-Wan's just definitely one of those characters that has a lot of depth to them, is, you know, just has a lot of depth, has a lot of story, and has a lot more to come that we still don't quite know. He still has a lot of story left, even though it's towards the end of his story, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi is one of the most prominent and most popular characters in Star Wars. He's definitely my favorite, as we all have said. I've said multiple times. But no, thanks for being on the show, Blake. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. And hey, I'm always here to talk about Star Wars. You can always count on me to have an opinion about something.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And thank you for listening, you listeners out there, and I guess watchers out there. Shows come out every 2 weeks on Thursday. I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do with this video format, so you might see a video, you might not. I don't know what's going on with this, but let me know if you like this, if you like the video aspect. Go to Facebook, leave a comment on the episode, or, you know, what? What'd you say?
It's trash. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Constructive criticism, that's what I say. But yeah, let me know what your thoughts are with the video format. So thanks for listening. Stay safe out there. And remember, you don't care.